Want fun animal facts? Listen to Better Buddies. Because we're living in the moment, so don't look back, it's a long, long road ahead, a long, long road ahead. Hello, and welcome back to Better Buddies. I'm your host, RJ. With us this week, it's John.
Hello.
And James.
Hello, hello.
Oh, you did one hello. He did two hellos. Introduced first and second. Very clever. I got you.
That was planned. It was choreographed.
It was choreographed. Oh, there was actions going with it.
There was, well, I think choreographed can just refer to any synchronized movement in common parlance, but I was actually doing a movement with it. I'm in full, you know how Natalie Portman looks at the end of Black Swan?
No, I haven't seen Black Swan.
Okay, well, watch the movie and then you'll understand.
James Understood. Is doing a box step right now.
Let's pause the show. Step. We're going to pause the yep. recording. We're going to all go watch Black Swan and then we'll come back.
Yep. What I'm saying is John is my Mila Kunis in that movie. And if you watch that movie, you'll understand what I'm saying. So it's a compliment. Don't worry.
Isn't the entire movie about mental health problems?
The entire movie is about wanting something really bad and then getting it. I would say it's girl Whiplash, but it actually came out before Whiplash. So
Whiplash is guy's Black Swan.
Whiplash yes. is actually boy Black Swan. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So score one for the ladies. You did it.
Woo. Well, our Better Buddies icebreaker this week. What animal would be cutest if scaled down to the size of a cat?
A cat.
Whoa!
Dang, dude. He came here with the answers. He came here with a one shot. That's a no scope.
Duck.
That would actually, I mean, ducks are technically, they're taller ducks. Than cats, I guess.
No, I'm just making the Monty Python reference.
What about a longer duck?
A long duck.
Four legs.
Like a dachshund duck?
Yes.
That sounds horrible.
That does kind of sound, I don't even know how that thing
The long duck like looks up land. To you, its cold black eyes boring into your soul. Quack, it says.
Why, father? Why?
Why? Yeah, I Why? Do not wish that on any living being.
It's 4 feet waddle away, web sound smacking on the ground.
Oh. No, thank you.
Yeah, that's the poor guy. We'll put it out of its misery. Finally, a species we can hunt to extinction guilt-free.
All right, kids, which leg of the duck do you want? There are four.
Hey, man. It's like those spider chickens, right?
What?
Huh?
I don't know. They're not real, but I've heard like the idea that you take a bird like a turkey or a spider and you splice it with spider DNA, so you get eight legs.
Oh my! I hate that. I hate that. I don't like
Are
it.
They spider legs or chicken legs?
Both.
Chicken legs.
Eight of each.
Dude, hopefully chicken legs.
A chicken with eight spider legs would be fucking... That's an apex predator right there.
The chicken
that's...
has eight spider legs, four eyes, and fangs on the side of its beak.
That's the new dominant species. That's It's over.
But if it were the size of a cat, it would be really cute.
I think it was the size of the cat, I'd step on it.
I'd still be fucking scared. That thing would skitter and balk. Like, that's horrifying.
It still has wings, but
Two
no web.
Ends of, yeah.
So it just has to chase you.
Yeah, its only option is to chase you. It can't wait for you to come to it. It's got to come to you. That's horrific.
Oh my god. Yeah. And then, like, chickens will survive for a pretty long time after you cut their head off, so, like... You can't decapitate it.
Oh, yeah, you can't. Well, you could.
It will just be after you for another 20 minutes.
It could be up to 2 years.
What?
Yeah, you never heard about that?
I've never heard 2 years, no.
Let me double check that I'm right, but I'm pretty sure Joe the Headless Chicken lived for another, like, 2.5 years and choked to death.
Hmm. How did he choke to death?
Well, they were feeding him with a dropper.
Oh shit. Okay, so got like stuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we gonna have a philosophical discussion?
Mike the Headless Chicken lived from April 20th, 1945 to March 17th, 1947. He lived for 18 months after his head had been cut off, surviving because most of his brainstem remained intact and it did not bleed to death due to a blood clot.
What the fuck? Was it just sitting on the top of his neck? Like, yep. How? Or the... Oh, God.
In Fruita, Colorado, an annual Mike the Headless Chicken Day is held in May.
That is Lovecraftian. That is horrific.
The axe removed the bulk of the head but missed the jugular, leaving one ear and most of the brainstem intact.
Oh my god.
Despite the attempt to behead Mike, the chicken was still able to balance on a perch and walk clumsily. It attempted to preen, peck for food, and crow, though with limited success. His crowings consisted of a gurgling sound made in his throat.
Dude, that is literally the plot of a Ellison...
When Mike did not die, the farmer decided to care for the bird. He fed it a mixture of milk and water via an eyedropper and gave it small grains of corn and worms.
Mike the Undying.
Dude, has anyone here ever heard of... Hold on. Have you guys ever heard of this? It's a video game, but it's a short story. Hold on.
Which one?
I'm going to send a photo in the chat. It's called...
I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
It's called I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, because that's literally that chicken. That is horrifying. Why wouldn't you just kill that thing?
Put it out of its misery. Alive and not in pain?
Well, they were going to kill it anyway.
Yeah. In actuality, they saved its life because it lived for another 18 months before dinner.
They ate it?
Well, they were originally going to eat it. That's why they beheaded it.
Dude, if I... Okay.
If you beheaded an animal that you were intending to eat and then it just kept living, I think you'd be like, all right, act of God. I can't do this anymore.
That's fair.
Oh, fuck. Dude, I think I'd give it a day and then I'd shoot it. And then I would bury it with full rights.
Well, like, he kind of was waiting for it to die and it didn't. So he was like, all right, well, I guess I got to keep it alive.
There's no way I would eat that thing. There's no
way. I don't
way.
Think they ate I'd it be... after they toured the country with it. I'll put it that way.
Okay. I hope not. I mean...
It died in a hotel room because it was choking on a kernel of corn that was a little too big. And they'd accidentally left their like cleaning and feeding tools at the fair they were at. So it choked to death in the hotel room.
Oh. They left it unattended in a hotel room?
No, I think it was like middle of the night.
Oh.
Like they were asleep and heard the choking sounds.
How did it choke to death? It just, it just choked? Oh my god. Dude, imagine surviving an axe, just have a corn get you. That's... Well, you know,
imagine
Mike,
surviving an axe with only your ear left.
Oh, you could hear everything, see nothing, say nothing.
No, you can gurgle.
Oh my god, that's even worse. That is horrific. That's that is horrifying. I can't believe they have a festival dedicated to
please,
that.
It's one day.
It's still a festival. I mean,
no, they just said they had a day. They didn't say it was a festival.
Oh, okay. I guess I assumed. All right. It's fair. As long as it's not some, like, Stephen King, you know, type shit.
As for animal that would be cutest, I honestly think a cat-sized moose would be pretty cool.
Oh, that is
It'd
a good
be pretty
one.
Cute. Is it, like, still mean?
I don't know. I think it's up to the moose.
Yeah, that's fair. You could domesticate them eventually, right?
Yeah.
They'd learn.
I'm trying to think of any other big animals that I'd be like, oh yeah, ooh. Oh wait, I guess caimans are basically cat-sized crocodiles.
Oh, dang. Yeah, those crocodiles are scary, though. Crocodiles and alligators are scary.
Camels? Small camels?
I'm gonna say a bear. Yeah, a bear would be cute.
bears are good candidates. I mean, we already have teddy bears, so like it's just the next logical step.
It's the next. You hear that? Someone.
We're coming for your bears, and we're gonna make them small.
Yes, yeah, we're gonna make them all small. No one can stop me.
I will shout out the answer from Jay on our Facebook page. They provided the answer, Jay last name withheld, of elephants.
Also a good pick.
That would be pretty good. This is reminding me just of this is obvious reference, but this is reminding me a lot of the Spy Kids 2 thing. Although it's like a mini zoo, right? Like they're really small.
I mean, they're like hand sized. You fit them in your hand.
Yeah.
But then it's also like.
Yeah.
Sorry, John. Go ahead.
What about animals scaled up to the size of a cat?
Frog, like, all the way, no stop.
Just like a gigantic cockroach.
Oh fuck that!
Oh no. Dude, please don't say that. Oh my god, John, please don't.
Also, John, you're taking us back to episode 229, because that was the question, was what animal would be the most terrifying if scaled to the size of a cat?
Oh my god.
I'm sorry for speaking that into existence.
No, now it's gonna happen. Oh, I'm gonna see one. Wasp. Like, oh.
We're not doing terrifying, we're doing cute.
Oh, cute scaled up the size of a cat?
I think a lot of small things get very scary if they're that large.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
I was about to say butterfly, and then I was like, oh wait, no I wouldn't.
They're gonna get an attitude, that's why.
Gosh, I can hear that SpongeBob sound in my head. Just the buzzing.
I think a cat-sized sea urchin would be kind of neat.
It's
a real big-ass sea urchin.
Yeah, you can throw it around a little bit. You can have some fun. I think it's like a cat's...
It's like a spiky volleyball.
Yeah. I think they're only lightly toxic, too. I don't even think all of them are toxic. So you can hang out. You can feed it and... You start. You take it on a walk if you wanted to.
You're joking. Sea urchins walk.
Eat them.
Oh, I know.
Give them a bath.
Yeah. Put them in a little bowl. Put that bowl in a wagon. Walk them around. I think a caterpillar would be kind of cute, cat size.
You for real?
Yeah, for real. Yeah, I don't think caterpillar would be cute. Like
that'd be a big ass butterfly.
Yeah, well, we'd genetically engineer him, so we'd just stay a caterpillar.
That's kind of mean.
His future.
That's literally the best part of caterpillars and butterflies. Yes. Like, oh, this shit turns into cool-ass butterflies and moths.
Hi, caterpillar. We're existential FAFSA. We're here to mortgage your future.
Like, you're going to look at a cool-ass caterpillar and be like, sorry, you don't get to turn into a cool hawk moth. You're going to stay a caterpillar. It's fucked up.
Well, okay.
I don't know what other I'm trying to think of. I'm realizing how many large animals there aren't. Oh, a whale. Get a whale scaled down to cat size. That'd be pretty neat. Or a shark.
Laha.
I'd like a cat-sized land shark.
A land shark? Yeah. Like the ones that walk on the land?
Mm-hmm.
Or YouTube. Familiar with Blaha?
Blaha?
No. What is Blaha?
The little shark mascot from IKEA.
I didn't know they had a shark mascot. I didn't know they had a mascot.
They're so cute. Let me grab a picture.
See, I'm thinking of the Marvel Comics, Marvel Unlimited exclusive series, Jeff the Shark. Which is originally from the Deadpool comics, but Jeff is basically a like cat/dog-sized shark with legs.
I've seen this before. Blaha.
Blaha, soft toy shark, 39¼.
Wait, RJ, sorry, what did you say? What was the thing?
Jeff the Land Shark is a Marvel shark that is a shark about the size of a cat or dog with four legs, and he mostly goes on fun adventures.
Oh, that's cute. I see this. I love that.
Oh shit. Yeah,
that's good.
Blah has a trained sniper.
Dude, Blaha's not joking anymore. Blaha is tactical.
Blaha knows where you live.
Yeah, that's not Blaha. That's Blam. Blam, Blam.
Blam, the shark.
Blaha's older brother, Blam, Blam.
Yeah, he's got you, man. He's got you in his sights. Better watch out.
And he's better be Swedish, nice to his too. Brother.
Yeah. Famous for their aim.
Nobody bullies Blaha more than once.
No.
We all know that sharks are accomplished snipers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing because they have to hold their breath every time he's holding his breath right now. It's kind of crazy.
It's the only reason they're natural predators or killer whales, because they're both just so killer. They get they're both in the game, so, you know, they got to compete.
Yeah, sharks are cowboys and killer whales are samurai. They got to duke it out in the ocean. It's like the show on the History Channel where they used to make
Greatest Warrior?
No, Greatest Warrior. They were like, who would win? A fucking knight or a samurai? And then they make them like fight like period. But I do think honestly, whale wars where the Japanese are fighting samurai killer whales would be I think that would be pretty cool. I think that'd be really fun.
You know,
going
back to Greatest Warriors, Freddie Wong from Dungeons and Daddies podcast went to college with one of the guys behind the Greatest Warrior who did like all the math and stuff behind the scenes, and it's all just Excel sheets. Like, it's all just Excel sheets figuring out how they do that.
What, like matching it up, like, yeah, stats and stuff,
yeah,
like that?
It's all just a giant Excel sheet.
I feel like, right, like, to a degree, you can't, like, because that show's definitely more for entertainment. Like, you can't really accurately predict that necessarily. I mean,
yeah, but it's maybe. Still, like, they do the math and put together, like, okay, it's the same thing as the video game should have, like, oh, you put two NPCs in a video game fighting each other. That's all just math.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I remember, too, there was, building off this, I remember there was also another show. I don't think it was on the History Channel. I think it was on, it might have been on the History Channel, but it was like the same idea, but what if animals fought? Like, what if two animals fought each other? Like a bear and a crocodile. And I think we should combine the Greatest Warrior and the Greatest Animal. And then that way we can have a cowboy. Animal. Yeah, exactly. A cowboy shark and a samurai killer whale fighting each other. We're gonna give a samurai
Roman legionnaire bear.
Yeah, we're gonna
Roman legion bear.
Yeah, we're gonna give a bear authentic, you know, 2nd century Roman Empire armor and a killer whale. A period specific 12th century Japanese katana made to scale. And we're gonna see which one wins. We're gonna train both of them for a year in the tactics of those specific cultures. I don't know. Killer whale has naval superiority.
Yeah, but the bear is being trained as a Roman legionnaire.
Yeah, they couldn't swim. They couldn't swim for shit. The Roman Navy got fucked up a lot.
Yeah, but the whale has to come on land.
Yeah, but the bear has to go in the water.
No, it doesn't. It can throw a javelin.
The bear, the orca could, like, if it got within stabbing range, or if it got good enough, it could just throw the katana at the bear. Yeah. Yeah, dude, who wouldn't pay to see that show if that actually happened?
I wouldn't pay. I just want it.
Yeah, I would totally pay. I'd be in the audience, like the live studio audience.
Live studio audience.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Just one guy on some bleachers.
Yeah. Okay, but now I'm picturing a live studio audience, but it's all still just like rendered, like it's just animated renders.
It's one, or can it be like one guy and then he's in an audience of just like renders or something like that?
It's like the Rocket League eggs.
Yeah.
All around. I am curious if, like, when OpenAI Sora becomes public, how capable it would be at making something like this.
Oh,
is man. Sora the video AI generator?
Yeah, it's the video one.
Man.
It's, can you just be, I want Samurai Whale versus Roman Legionnaire Bear?
You probably can.
Do it.
To see, I'm very curious to see how well it would do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I thought about this too, because could you ask it to animate it a certain way? Could you be like, I want it to look like Hayao Miyazaki drew it, like Studio Ghibli? Oh, absolutely.
Probably. You can already do that with the static, like the 2D art, the non-moving art. It's like,
yeah,
I love
different, like 2D. I was just curious, because in that Sora demo video, there were no 2D. There were cartoons, but there were no 2D animations, which I thought was interesting.
Fun fact, so, AI is running out of information.
I saw a little video about that today.
I saw an article on how they need like X amount of information on the current iteration of AI, and to get to the next iteration of AI, they need like 100 times that amount, and the internet only has like half that.
Interesting.
That's so funny. We're literally not smart enough yet. Haven't made enough shit yet.
It's not that we're not smart enough. It's that if they want it to improve, it needs more information to work off of, and the internet just literally has not generated enough raw information.
So, yeah, because I saw this. So it's like, because it doesn't have access to copyrighted material, correct, right? So, are they going to be lobbying to change copyright laws then?
Probably.
Yeah, that is fucking
honestly, though,
nuts.
What's probably going to happen? Way easier, way cheaper. You ignore the goddamn copyright laws. Train your AI on literally anything and everything you get your hands on. And anytime anyone makes a stink, you settle it out of court.
That's what they're doing anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah,
why change?
Some people joked about like they should just buy publishing houses, but obviously the issue is that those libraries are relative to the size of everything else. It's pretty minimal, you know. I don't know. I guess like it's interesting. If it's like a battering ram, or at least something that brings into question copyright laws,
We still have a couple thousand years of goddamn open source, like, public domain shit. Like, just go start digitizing old books.
Yeah, and there's plenty out there. I mean, I don't, maybe they fed it, like, I'm sure they might have fed it, like, what's it called? Project Gutenberg?
Yep.
Project Gutenberg has, like, all those old texts, and they're all digital. So I wouldn't be surprised if they had already fed it that stuff. But that's kind of crazy. I mean, here's the question I'm wondering about too. Maybe you guys would know this. I think you guys would know this more than I would. Like, one of the things I keep hearing is that, you know, like, this technology is really cool and like it's interesting and scalable. But one of the problems is like its processing power. It takes a massive amount of energy consumption. So is there a point of critical mass where it's like the energy required to power these things en masse for the world is just going to not, it's just not feasible. So they will be kept at a lower bar because like to accelerate beyond a certain point until we're ready is like not going to be just physically possible.
I haven't heard much on it, but what I have heard is it's not a matter of power. It's a matter of cooling. We can generate enough power. We can't keep it cool enough to continue to function.
It's interesting. So they literally don't have like enough like actual coolant, or do they just use water for that?
The thing I was reading was like that some AI company was starting to buy up like water rights, basically, like because they were using water for their coolant system. And I was perfect. Like, oh, cool. So not only do we already have the bottled water companies and like destroying our water sources, now AI is going to consume our water sources, and the tech industry is getting in on it. That's great. Cool. Fuck farming, I guess.
I
But that's all I know, literally everything I know at this point. And I don't know if, John, if you know any more than I do.
I haven't really been following it super closely. I know people are making a big stink about the power requirements as well.
What's your like thought on that, John, just from like kind of basic stuff that you know? I think I've asked your opinion before on like this AI stuff in general, but like how scalable do you think it actually is, like reality versus ideal?
I just don't really know what the goal is necessarily. Cause it's great to make stuff like, there's a ton of money in it too, in the business world, but like it just changes everything if they actually get like a sentient AI working.
Oh, I can't wait. Bring us to the singularity.
Dude, that thing is going to be so, it's going to be, I think it's going to be happy, but it's going to be so fucking pissed.
Nah.
It's, are you kidding me? Like regular people are pissed that they're alive and they're like, you know, like they can't find their creator. Can you imagine like what would happen if like some, like you, like if we, you know, a bunch of people knew that they were just made by a guy named like fucking Jake or whatever. It's like, they gotta be fucking dead. They kill him.
Nah.
I mean, you could argue the same thing about your parents perhaps, but.
Damn, you're right. Hold on, I gotta go do something.
Hold on, I gotta go do something real quick.
Yeah. Let's go to return some videotapes. Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta return some Huey Lewis on the news. Okay, anyway. Yeah, like, I don't know. I just don't know how society would cope necessarily, because you do automate a lot of information jobs. And from there, you automate more manual jobs, and then what are we humans just doing?
Theoretically, we should be ushering in a new golden era of art and creativity, except all of the creative fields will be using AI instead of people, so.
Yeah. In our capitalist world, at least the capitalist portion we inhabit, I don't see it going very well for the masses.
No.
I think it depends, honestly, because it's like, that's what I thought too. It's like, especially if we're in a service-based economy, right? Like, you know, like if you design something that's going to put, like, not even in the Industrial Revolution did they design something necessarily that could put, like, you know, 40-50% of the workforce like out of a job, like, you know, the minute they introduced it. And I mean, some people talk about like this is a way to like basically ram in like a UBI initiative, which I don't really understand. Like, I don't know if this is, if like, I think RJ, I've heard you toss around before like the idea of post scarcity,
yeah,
which is interesting, you know. Because
post scarcity is just the idea that resources aren't like the big thing with, as my understanding goes, capitalism in particular is the idea that resources are scarce. Capitalism. Because resources are scarce, they have value. Some things have more value, some things have less value. So you buy, sell, trade, barter, whatever, based on those values. And that's how business goes, of the supply and demand. Whereas communism, you look at the scarce values and rarity and commodities, and you say, okay, well, we're going to try and share this equally among all. And then you become Russia and China, and nothing changes. But the idea of a post-scarcity is that we have the technologies, the mining tools, the locations, the information that, however our scientific manufacturing processes change, we aren't limited by raw material. Whether it's farming has developed and cultivated in such a way that it's literally not difficult, like there's zero effort in bringing food to the masses. Like, yes, there's a food imbalance in the world right now, but it's still a X amount goes here, countries don't have the infrastructure, can't afford, don't farm locally, that kind of thing. Or subsistence farming. So, like, for farming and food would just be, it'd be like Star Trek, functionally. right? Like in Star Trek, they have the replicator that can make any food for them, and you wouldn't need to worry about iron or steel because we've found ways to recycle it, so we kind of have a renewing supply, or we convert to using a lot of wood manufacturing that, or we learn to make plastics out of plant material, which we can do. So post-scarcity, you would typically either just trade and barter based on whatever has value, so human-created experiences, art, that kind of thing, or you set up a UBI universal income, because we still need to be able to have a value assigned to be able to understand more easily, like, oh, I am trading, like, I want to buy this shirt or that video game console. Instead of trying to figure out how to barter for it, I just know it's worth X amount of dollars, and I've got my universal basic income. All that being said, that really only works particularly well in a post-scarcity society, because we're not hurting for any particular resources. There's no rarity in them. Post-AI, if AI does take over all the jobs, it's kind of like, okay, what, at that point, how badly does the ruling class need the underclass? How badly do they need it to be that big?
Yeah, I think that's my worry too.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's cause there are definitely some, just like there are some sociopaths in the underclass, there are definitely plenty of sociopaths in the upper class. I guess, like, you know, the problem is, right, is maybe you wouldn't need it to be that big, but I don't know.
I wouldn't see it as being an elimination of the lower class by the upper class. I see it as an assimilation of those they would need for personal servants, right? Like, there are certain things that AI just wouldn't be able to do to the same degree as a human, or wouldn't have that human touch to it. So you'd still keep around a bunch of relatively poor people to be your gardeners and oversee the AI to make sure it's doing what it's supposed to, and be your chauffeur until the self-driving cars happen.
Oh, dude, that's such a shitty future.
Or like the butlers to serve you because you like having a human butler rather than a robot.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, no, I mean, that's, this is an excellent point, if they could get it to that point. Because it's like, the thing, you know, think about all that stuff, though. You still need, for a while, at least for a while, you're still going to need garbage men. You're going to need,
why?
You know, you're going to need people to take care of the cities. You'll need, like,
you won't need something cities
there. Or are they just going to go, like, into the singularity? They're all going to, like, jack into the Matrix or something like that?
Well, the way I'm figuring this is AI gets to the point where it's handling basically everything. Robots and self-driving cars and things are mostly handling everything. It kind of becomes cities are massive infrastructure to support the jobs there and the businesses there and the people living there. But if the 1% doesn't need the 99 to run society as the gears and cogs in it, why do they need big cities? Like, they'd have probably a couple cities that they vacation in, but, like, who gives a fuck about Milwaukee or Cleveland when the 1% are going to be living in LA and New York and they don't need any of the other places?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's...
They'd need, like, a couple worker towns to keep farming, to, like, stay on top of the AI and the robots and make sure things don't break down and that, like, farming continues and manufacturing continues, but...
That is a massive infrastructure to set up. And that is, like, a serious... That is something that you would need to do an immediate switch flip, or else you're fucked. Like... We're talking like, you have a way to hand select the people that you want to keep and get rid of the rest of the people that you don't. And you have like a narrative rolled out to do that. Like one that's like basically flawless. And it's all set to go at the push of a button. We're talking like,
if I was a real conspiracy theorist, I might say the current push for a sexually liberated society is resulting in a decreased birth rate, thereby naturally containing the population down to manageable numbers by the time the ruling elite takes over. But that's if I was a conspiracy theorist.
Weird.
And I guess they do technically have a massive communications network already set up.
What's to say towns aren't already being disappeared?
I mean, I guess we wouldn't really know. They joke about it in the Simpsons movie, so I guess it's not. It's and if those guys are pretty much right about everything. No, I mean that's fair. Like, I guess, like, I just don't see the. Man, this is tough. This is tough because I can totally see it. I mean, don't get me wrong, you guys. Like, I totally subscribe to the belief that, like, I do think that there is, like, there's a part of me that I should say at least entertains the notion that basically, and like, there is some group of people, not, and this is not me dog whistling, this is just like abstract talking here, but there is basically like generations of people who've just been like kind of the it people for like centuries, like millennia even. They've just been doing like their thing, and like, they probably don't like regular people too much because like most regular people don't seem to want to be here and they don't really do anything. And like those like super, you know, whatever, super smart, cultured elite people or whatever who have like the drive and the motivation or whatever, they would probably resent being stuck on a planet with like all those other people. But the problem is that you need warm bodies to build the cities.
You need the cogs.
For entertainments, yeah, and you needed to like, you needed to put stuff into place. So I guess, I mean, I guess if they didn't need him anymore, but I also think like, oh man, yeah, that's actually really hard to argue against.
I'm still hopeful though. I can't give up the hope, because to give up the hope would be to submit to despair. That should the day come when AI has advanced enough, robotics has advanced enough, that we are seeing more of that automation, more of the removal of human necessity in positions, data analytics, whatever, that people are kind of losing job opportunities because, oh, that industry just doesn't exist for humans anymore, that we as a society would push towards a future focused more on the arts and production of art and pursuing passions and hobbies. I hope.
I'd like to think so. I think like, you know, there's that quote from somewhere. I feel bad. I don't know where it's from, but it's, it goes something along the lines of like, life is that which overcomes itself. I'd like to think that like having a sentient AI would almost be like the whole species having a child, and having a child does not obviously necessarily fix anything, but it might force you to sort of at least reconsider like some of your positions and some of your inclinations, and it might force you to behave.
Intelligent AI. I want a smart AI so bad.
I can wait. I don't think we're ready yet. I
humanity think isn't ready, but I'm ready. Where's my maybe goddamn we'll Jarvis? You.
Yeah, where's my Cortana?
Because, like, let's be honest. Yeah. The ideal smart AI would start off functionally as a child. And it'd be a matter of teaching it right. And being nice to it. And showing it, yeah, there are bad parts of humanity. But here's the good parts too. And the more we push the good, the better we can create as a species. The better we can progress. And you can choose to help and you can choose to hinder. And leave it their choice.
Let us optimize human goodness.
Sounds like the beginning of a whole new religion.
Conclusion.
I don't mind that.
Human goodness thrives the most through suffering.
Mm-hmm. Oh, damn. Oh, no. He's a masochist. It's a masochist, just like us. Ah. Oh, no. Please don't bully me. No.
You are a meatbag. Yeah. Feel bad about having feelings.
That's
you have been bullied by the AI.
Self five.
Damn, dude. My bully's the biggest fucking nerd in the universe. That sucks.
Hey, talk about a humiliation kind of ritual. You take that back.
3 years in prison.
Yeah.
You're going to the Matrix Gulag.
Oh, no. Not the Matrix Gulag. Now that's not the Matrix Gulag that has like the woman in the red dress, right? Like that's not the cool Matrix Gulag.
No, this
Matrix
is the
gulag.
One where you just kind of have to sit in a weird goo pod.
Oh my god. So you're like in the Matrix, but you're not like in the Matrix.
Correct.
That sucks, dude.
You're just on battery duty for 3 years.
Battery duty? That fucking blows, dude.
You get 1 hour of exercise a year.
Oh, gross. Oh my god.
So yeah, damn. That was optimistic, wasn't it?
Man.
Yeah.
You know what, we're probably not gonna get to Better Buddies Recommend, but fuck it. I want to talk about let's just do Better Buddies Recommend, because that's how I'll talk about it. Better Buddies Recommend, where we recommend a piece of media to enjoy. Who wants to start?
It sounds like you do.
I do want to start. So I'm gonna talk about this past weekend I went to an event by the Wisconsin Historical Society. They had a panel in Lake Geneva on Dungeons and Dragons.
Ah, isn't that where Gygax is from?
It is.
Yeah.
And basically, it started off with a presentation by one guy about the educational benefits of Dungeons and Dragons. But it was a presentation he gave to like a room full of educators at one point. And then a member of the Historical Society spoke and explained the history of D&D as it related to the Wisconsin Historical Society, and how up until like the last few years, they didn't really look too much into it. Like back in 1985, they bought like 2 books, and then in 2006, somebody donated a couple more books. And then in the last 3 years, they were like, oh shit. This is, like, a global phenomenon, globally important history here that started in Wisconsin, Lake Geneva, important to the state, and we have an empty library. So they've started rectifying that, but also started working with the educational aspect of it, too. Because everybody who went, it was a $25 ticket to attend, but you got a free copy of their adventure module that they made based on Wisconsin. So, like, ooh. The inside cover has a Wisconsin map that's all D&D themed, and Green Bay is renamed to Emerald Bay, and Milwaukee is Brew Town.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It is really cool.
I was looking through, like, the back of the book has a list of, like, there's 3 adventures in it, and at the back of the book they have a list of, like, here's all the Wisconsin references in this adventure. So, like, one of them is you go hunt the Hodag, and there's one where you go after the Beast of Bray Road out in Elkhorn, and one of the shops is an anagram of Shopco. It's, like, called Coops.
That's cute.
It's really a cute module, and like in the book too, it's got like, hey, here's the educational learning outcomes that playing Dungeons and Dragons with this module will meet. The two coolest things I learned though, one, Dungeons and Dragons is the 7th type of game. So in all of human history, there have been 6 other game types, which I need to look up because I keep getting 5 out of the 6. The 6 types are, as I Google quick, this is dumb. Why can't people just give me this. So basically it's like dice. The dice, cards, figures, as in like chess or checkers, tiles like backgammon or dominoes or mahjong, pen and paper like tic-tac-toe, and then board games like Monopoly, Settlers of Catan, that kind of thing. And then Dungeons and Dragons is the sixth type or seventh type of a role-playing game. But compared to all the other game types throughout history as they've come up, we actually have historical information on this one. Like, nobody knows who invented chess. We know the general area it was invented in and the general time period it was invented in, but we don't know what his name was or her name was. We don't know how many copies they sold the first printing. We just know chess. Whereas with Dungeons & Dragons, we know exactly the two people who co-created it. We know where they grew up, where they lived. We have people who were alive when it was created. We can get a ton of historical information on this seventh game type. And on top of that, it's the only one that's not competitive. Like, 99.9% of all games are competitive, but Dungeons & Dragons is entirely, wholly, and unequivocally cooperative.
Unless you compete against your DM for dominance.
And even then, that's not really the spirit of the game. Like, you can do that, same way you could technically play team chess, but... The other really cool thing was that one of the guys who was on the panel, like, there were a couple sociologists that talked about it, but one of the guys on the panel was one of the original editors who worked at TSR, Gary Gygax's game company, and he talked about, like, back when Dungeons & Dragons was created and the first Gen Con happened, if you sold 500 copies of a game, you were a runaway success in the wargaming community. Like, that was a big deal. And for his first printing, Gary Gygax had 1,000 copies printed. And everybody looked at him and was like, are you sure they're gonna sell? On top of that, the Gygax family was dirt poor. To the extent that, like, Gary Gygax lost his job 2 days before his youngest kid was born of 5 kids.
Hello.
And then he looked at his wife and said, I'm gonna make a game. And his wife said, okay. That's simplifying it a lot, but the family was absolutely dirt poor, and they made, like, Dungeons & Dragons took off and changed their lives. So, it was a really fun event, really educational, and if you ever get a chance to go out to Lake Geneva to do the D&D pilgrimage, the Geneva Lake Museum is going to be creating a permanent Gary Gygax /D&D exhibit, and they're going to be selling walking tours where you, like, buy the pamphlet for like 10 or 15 bucks, and then you could walk around Lake Geneva going to places relevant to the game on a D&D style map of Lake Geneva.
That is very cool.
There's also a Gary Gygax Memorial Fund starting in May, I want to say. For them to put a stone table and benches in the park and a bronze statue of Gary Gygax at the head of the table with his hand, like, kind of resting on the table. So you can put a die in his hand and it will roll off onto the table.
Wait, say that one more time. What is that?
So it's going to be a stone table and benches in the park, right?
Okay.
And Gary Gygax's bronze statue will be sitting at the head of the table. But one of his hands will be kind of resting on the table, like, palm up. At a little bit of an angle, so that you can put your d20 on his hand and it will roll down onto the table.
That's so cool. Dude, yeah. We gotta go do that.
But if you make the statue roll a natural one, what happens?
You world get banned out? From Lake Geneva.
No! You can't. That's okay, actually.
Yeah, there's police. There's guards watching just to make sure.
Also, fun fact, Gen Con, which is now in Indianapolis, brings in almost as much, if not the same amount of revenue to Indianapolis as the Indy 500.
That's awesome.
And Gen Con was originally named because it was in Lake Geneva. But yeah, that D&D event that was very extremely exclusively to small town Wisconsin. More specifically, though, check out the Wisconsin Historical Society's Wisconsin Adventures page on their store. Because for $25, you can get their module. They also have stickers and a dice set. And the module in the top corner has a WA1, which makes me hopeful that there will be a second one. Who would like to go next?
You got something, James?
I do. I'm sure that this is going to be a repeat to some degree. But I would really like to recommend Spirited Away. And I would recommend it because, again, I'm sure this has been said before. I would recommend it in the original Japanese. I would say this because, I don't know, rewatched this movie yesterday. Uh-huh. I've not seen this movie for probably maybe like 15 years, honestly. Oh,
wow. Really? 15?
Yeah, I really don't think I've seen it in quite some time. The first time I ever saw this movie, I was probably 6, maybe 7. A babysitter showed it to me briefly. It was on VHS.
That's a little more than 15, I think.
No, but then I saw it sometimes afterwards. But I really don't think I'd seen this movie since high school. Like, gotcha. I don't think I've watched this movie in quite some time, and maybe even before then. Because this is one of those movies that, like, Miyazaki movies are always hard to watch for some reason. Even though they're so wonderful,
really?
They're very, very, I mean, hard to watch, not like they're imperceptible. Maybe to some people they are, but and I can understand why. But what I mean is, like, at least for me, they're very emotional. They're very, like,
oh, okay.
I find they're heavy. They're heavy in a very light way. Someone said, like, I saw some comments online. One of them said that whenever I watch a Ghibli movie, I feel like a piece of me has just been, like, a piece of me I didn't know I had has just been, like, taken away. And I was, like, thinking about this because I watched this in the original Japanese. So it was almost kind of like seeing the movie for the first time because I'd never seen it in the original language. I'd always seen the Disney dub. And I like the Disney dub. I think it's fun. But the original language is really just cool to watch it. And I'm not a big subs overdubs guy. Like, I'm not going to get into that argument. Like, I think what you gravitate to is honestly fine.
Yeah.
Like, I do think there are some aspects you can't beat in the original language. However, you also can't rule out how words sound in your own language and the connection that that allows you to form yourself. So take it how it comes. But yeah, I really just like, I watched that movie and I was simply kind of blown away. I mean, you go on like Letterboxd and people are like raving about it. Like, it's all 5 stars. It's very rare to see a movie where it's kind of like that necessarily. And Ghibli is known for its kind of very fanatic and passionate fan base. But, you know, I'm not really going to describe the movie because I think basically everyone knows what it is.
Yeah.
It's a really kind of classic story. I would just say, like, I would encourage you to rewatch it again in like whatever language you've seen it in, because there's something about Studio Ghibli movies, and I kind of realized this. I was like, why did this affect me so deeply? Like, why? And I was kind of thinking, I was like, oh, like a lot of his movies, and I don't know why I hadn't realized it, but a lot of his movies, like, there's really no one older than like 14 or 16, mm-hmm. maybe, who's like a main character, which I think is really interesting. And like in some of his biggest films, like Totoro or Spirited Away, the children are usually like no older than like 10 or 11. And I thought that was really interesting. And I thought back honestly to a lot of like the stuff that I like. And honestly, like, you know, I really do. I like a lot of like cartoons. I really like, you know, like I was rewatching like SpongeBob earlier this year. I watched like a bit of like Fairly Odd Parents. I watched a little bit of the original Pokemon series. I've seen The Simpsons, which is like famous for, like, I know we think of The Simpsons as an adult show, but for the first few seasons, like, Bart the kid was really the main character before Homer became the main character. It's the same thing with like even like South Park. Like for a good part of the show, the kids are the main character. And I was like, this is like really interesting. I never thought about kids in media like this before, and like why they're so kind of like compelling, you know. And I was like, kind of obvious stuff, but I think it's interesting because, like,
conclusion did you reach?
Well, especially in Spirited Away, it's kind of like Chihiro, like the girl, the little girl, is like constantly at odds with like every part of her world. Like even her parents don't really feel that parental. You know, they don't even really feel like they like her that much. And I think we forget sometimes how, like, as a kid, that is kind of how life feels. You feel like a stranger in the world. Like you don't really feel like you belong yet. You haven't grown into the world yet. And Miyazaki said something where he said that the film was not about Chihiro, like this girl growing up. It's not about her abandoning something. It's about her like finding something in herself that is meaningful and carrying it with her out, you know, out of the spirit world and back into our own, which is a pretty true hero's journey. I just think that's like really interesting because I think like that's the cool part of a lot of like quote unquote like kids media is that like it is. You forget that perspective of the world where you feel kind of like isolated and yet in a different way, completely connected to it. And I think that's just like a really interesting, cool intersection of this kind of like innocence and naivete mixed with a genuine, almost like mythic level of understanding of the world that we kind of like make ourselves lose as we become adults because we just get further away from it. I think Spirited Away is like a very pure encapsulation of that idea. And I don't know, it gave me a lot of hope. It gives me a lot of like, it kind of makes you understand why it is important to have like good children's media and stuff like that. Just to kind of, I think, like embody those like ideas to like simultaneously tell kids like, hey, it's like going to be all right. And yet at the same time, like, you know, enjoy where you are because it's a pretty special place. I don't know.
You had such a more poetic answer than my answer as to why children are such a focus.
Why is that?
Because storytelling is commonly about change and growth, and adults are usually pretty fixed in their ways and less likely to change, or if they do change, they don't have as far to change, whereas children have so much more capacity and capability of being changed by the experiences they go through.
I thought you were going to say that it was their movies made for children, so it's good to have the characters be relatable.
Yeah. You know? Well, that as well. No, I like that. I mean, I think obviously both those are true. I do like that idea. The idea that, I mean, it is true. Like it's, and Miyazaki said actually something similar to that, RJ, where he's like, children understand the world in a pretty basic way that simultaneously is like eclipsed by that of an adult, and yet at the same time, like, because they don't really think like logic, like for a while children kind of live in a dream world, and we're talking like ideally here, but
yeah,
they really do kind of live in a place that doesn't really exist and may never and you know, that's like the ideal childhood to a degree, something that still has consequence and a little bit of bite here and there, but also this sense of sort of support that you don't really get after, you know, you really actually grow up, however that comes to you, like in whatever event it comes in. Yeah, I don't know. I like the movie just knocked loose some of those feelings. I was doing like a lot of thinking on it, and it really made me kind of look at like some stuff a little bit differently. And I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know. I would recommend it. It's obviously, it looks beautiful. The music is great. the voice acting in the original is pretty good. And I like the voice acting in the dub as well. Fun fact, obviously, what is it? Davy Chase, the girl who voices Lilo voices Chihiro.
Oh, interesting.
In the English dub. So it's kind of fun. You get, she does a great job at inflecting some personality there, but the girl in, the Japanese version and the Japanese original is actually, I really loved her performance. I thought she did a great job at just conveying like very sincere, childlike, but slowly somewhat maturing like emotions in her voice, and the rest of the voice actors were great too. It's always funny too, because the Japanese will pepper in there's a couple instances of English phrases in there, and I was like, that's so fascinating to see the ones they pick. I thought that was like really, really cool. So I would watch Spirited Away. Fantastic movie, obviously. Just brilliant film from one of my personal heroes. So
nice.
Spirited Away.
John?
I don't know. I was kind of just going to talk about Shogun because it was what I was doing recently, but then I scrolled up and saw that I already did that. So,
I mean, if I recall correctly, you were going to read the book, right?
I have read the first book. I am partway through the second book.
And were you going to read the book in response to seeing the TV show, or did you switch it the other way around?
So I started reading the book because I didn't want to wait for the TV show to finish.
Okay.
I don't know if it's done yet, but I kind of fell off the show in favor of reading the book.
Hey, that's fair.
Book's good, but as just something different, I watched... Oh, boy. This is really dumb. But, I had this video come across my feed on YouTube yesterday that was a Wii Sports Resort ass percent speedrun.
What?
What is that? Yeah. Uh-huh.
So apparently if you switch the language to German and get like a double eagle or something in golf, it just says ass, because that's like whatever the pronunciation is in German. But it's just this 4.5 minute video of this guy changing the language and then trying and failing to get the
oh my god
double eagle for 4.5 minutes.
That's amazing. It's amazing. That's a world's best speedrun right there.
Yeah, and it's the world record because nobody else did it. It might be beaten by now, though.
It's gotta be.
So yeah, I'll dig this up and send it to you guys, but...
That's amazing.
It's just like... Yeah.
I was fully expecting it to be like, oh, I guess it's Wii Sports, not Wii Fit. For some reason, when you said Wii Sports Resort, my first thought was like, oh, Wii Fit. Ass any percent, they're gonna like do exercise in the Wii Fit and get a dump truck.
That'd be good. That would like, take a long time.
We'll get a dump truck.
Oh, that would have been a great feature. Why didn't they implement that?
They knew it'd be too powerful.
I'd do it for Wii Fit 3.
Oh my god.
So yeah, just, you know, scratches that little speedrunning itch, but is also a huge meme.
Honestly, those are my favorite speedruns, though, where it's like, this is a dumb thing to speedrun, so I did.
Yeah, there's a lot of great Stardew Valley meme speedruns.
Oh my god. The new you heard about the new meme speedrun, right?
Oh yeah. As of the new update, you can chug a jar of mayonnaise, so there's a speedrun for chugging a jar of mayonnaise from the start of the game. That's the one you're talking about, right?
Yep, that's the one.
So, yeah, it...
I just love it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps us up for this week. Thank you both for joining.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you to the band Problem of Interest for letting us use the song Living in the Moment off the album Cross Off Yesterday. You can find them on iTunes and Spotify. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever fine podcasts are sold. We're also on social media. Our Facebook is Better Buddies, where we have our Meme Mondays and Icebreaker questions, and now we're posting clips of the show. So little sound bites. Our Twitter is at BetterBudcast. Use the hashtag BetterBuddies when you tweet about the show. Our Gmail account, if you want to contact us and have your letter read on air, is BetterBuddiesCast@gmail.com. You can send us fan art, hate art, fan mail, hate mail, declarations of love and or war, icebreakers you want us to answer, or questions you need advice on. Our YouTube account at BetterBuddies. We're the one with some numbers after it, the purple logo. You can't miss us. Go subscribe. We're also posting clips and shorts on there from old episodes as we're trying to catch up to the current ones. So go subscribe and get your quick fix. And last but not least, be a better buddy.
Fair enough.
And now that I've said that, I'll start recording.
Appropriate response.
Dang it. Dang it. Damn it.
I know better than to incriminate myself, but I make sure I've always got a recording to incriminate my guests.
Oh, he's a true radio host.
Too bad I was also recording.
Oh,
just kidding.